الشيوخ الكبار.
First, we would like to add something to what we mentioned yesterday, a little bit more clarification. Story of Rabbi Preda, about whom we said that his patience in teaching a student every item of Torah 400 times till the student knew it well, and for this he was blessed with both 400 years of life on this world, and that he and all the parts of his neshama, which Pina terms as he and his entire generation, receive get eden. We say first that he received 400 years. 400 is Tef. The letter Tef, the last letter of the alphabet, was being met to the year 400. The reason he got 400 years is because the fact that he taught Torah. The Torah is written, the Chaf Bet, Otiyot HaTorah, the 22 letters of Torah, from Aleph until Tef, one tilt from Aleph, first part of the Tef to last. Tef is 400. Therefore, he merited this number. Of course, he taught Torah with such intensity, he merited receiving 400 years of life. According to the Ri HaKadosh, we said that he and his entire generation received Get Eden, meaning that he and all the parts of his neshama received Get Eden. To make this a little clearer, means that a person comes back in Gilgul to perfect certain mitzvot which he was lacking. That means that only certain parts of his neshama come back at a time. Now, it could be that when he comes back at one time, there still remain other parts of the neshama that have not been perfected yet. So this would require him coming back a number of times later, no matter how he made out this time. The offer here was that he and every single part, every minutest part of his neshama, would be certified for Gan Eden, would be classified as though he had completed and perfected every last iota of his neshama. Now, the main item, primary item, why do we use that number? Why was it so that he taught Torah 400 times? Why specifically this number 400, which resulted in 400 years of life? The Torah is called the Tree of Life because he taught Torah 400 times. He got back for it life 400 years as a reward. Why 400? Because Fedashim Seder Mashah says that the three parts of a person's soul, Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. Nefesh is the lowest part of the soul, that part which remains on earth after a person passes away with the body, part of it. Ruach, which ascends to a higher plane. And the Neshama, that's the holiest part of all, that goes to the upper level of Gan Eden. It's part of the Shekhinah, the Neshama. These three parts are like, compared to the Yisrael, that's the lowest, that's the Nefesh, the Levi, who is the Ruach, and the Kohen, who is the Neshama. Well, the rule is that the Yisrael, whose field produces 100 bushels of wheat, is supposed to give Ma'aser, 1/10 of his earnings, to the Levi. This is called Ma'aser. That means now that the Yisrael has 100, the Levi now has 10, Ma'aser. There is a law of Terumat Ma'aser, Terumah, from this Ma'aser, which the Levi is now supposed to give to the Kohen. So that, in turn, the Kohen now has 1. That means, hence, that if the Yisrael has 100, then the Kohen will have 1. It requires 100 for the Yisrael before the Kohen receives 1. We want the Neshama to receive 1 chelik, 1 part of what the Nefesh has. Person learns Torah, that's the basic part of the person, the nefesh, learns Torah. If he learns it 100 times, the neshama will have it once. How many times is a person supposed to learn Torah? As a minimum, we said, just as Hashem taught Moshe Rabbeinu 4 times. This in turn was transmitted to Aaron HaKohen, to his children, to the 70 elders of the Kenim, and the Jews, minimum of 4 times. So to this minimum, in order for the Neshama to have this minimum of 4, he had to learn it 400 times. That the Neshama gets this Trumat Maaser, 1%, that should result in 4. The Neshama then too has 4. Basically, the number 4 is the origin for everything in creation. It all stems from the name of Hashem, which has 4 letters. These represent the 4 worlds, 4 levels of the worlds. Olam HaAsiya, that's this lower world. Olam HaYetzira, the world of angels. Olam HaBriya, the world of the heavenly throne. Olam HaAtzilut, that's the upper, highest world of Kadosh Baruch Hu. This in turn, too, results in the 4 types of creation. Domim, Tzomeach, Chai, Medaber. Domim, the inorganic, things that are not alive, stone, earth. Tzomeach, vegetation that is alive but does not move. Chai, animal life, bird life. Medaber, the highest, that's human life. But this, too, is the 4 elements of creation. Esh, Ruach, Mayim, Afar. Fire, air, water, and earth, which are the 4 elements, no more than 4 elements of which everything in existence consists of. So that we have then, too, the Torah itself, consisting of 4 basic concepts. In the study, we mentioned Pardes, 4 ways of learning Torah, 4 levels in depth. Pardes is Pshat, the regular translation. But Emes, the hints found, Derush is the deeper explanation, and Sod was the secrets of Kabbalah in the Torah. And therefore, this number 4 that is necessary as a minimum, an origin, multiplied, it amounts to 100 or 400, which was the reason why this student had to get it 400 times, because he had to learn it thoroughly throughout. So obviously, Peida was not wasting time with a dull student only. There was a lot of depth going into this study, so deep that it warranted such a tremendous reward. The reward for Torah is long life. And long life means this world, and where life is truly long, that's in Olam Haba. Now, continuing this topic of the study of Torah, the Gemara says 2 statements. The night was created for the sake of learning Torah, for the sake of sleep. Learning Torah or sleep. Now the wording is, the night was created for the sake of sleeping. The moon was created. The moon refers to the nighttime. The moon was created for the sake of learning Torah. But is it sleeping or is it learning Torah? Is it night or is it moon? To understand this, we must understand first what happened at the time of creation. When Hashem first created the world, the first night was completely dark. It says, "Balachoshech kara laila." Hashem called the day, he called it light, and darkness he called night. The darkness he called night, that means that it was pitch black. There was no light whatsoever. But there were a sun and moon. What about light then? At that time, the sun and the moon both served together during the daytime. When the moon complained, it came with a revolt, rebelled against having 2 lanterns in the sky, then Hashem said to the moon, your light will be taken from you, you'll be deprived completely of your light. You will have only light from reflection of the sun, and you will serve at night. By day there is no use. We have no use of the moonlight. Therefore you will serve at night. Which means that now the night no longer was pitch black. There is moonlight at night. This is what the Gemara says, that when we have night without the moon, that's when it is time to sleep. As long as there is moonlight, then a person should study Torah at night. Which means that a person, too, the lesson here, of course, is too. That when it, Jimenez says that the night was made for sleep, it means that by day, a person should not waste his time on sleep. Time for sleeping is at night because by day there is light, and by day a person is more awake, more alert. Because of the light of day, he is more alert, his mind is sharper, he can study Torah much deeper by day. In addition, the Nisal Ari HaKadosh adds that sleeping by day is very inadvisable and at times dangerous. A person goes to sleep, it is possible that at that moment his neshama rises up to heaven, as happens during his sleep. But while his neshama is away, there may enter into him a part of somebody else's neshama. Variably, this part that enters into him and remains attached to his regular neshama usually is the neshama of Chas v'Shalom Eid Hashem. That's the kind of neshama that enters when he sleeps by day. Therefore, the Ari HaKadosh says a person should avoid sleeping by day, except on Shabbat. Only on Shabbat is it permissible, or is it not harmful, for a person to sleep. During the week, daytime sleep could be harmful, chas v'shalom. So that it is best to use the nighttime alone for sleep. The day should be used for the study of Torah. But even the nighttime, too, should not be spent entirely in sleep. The Torah says, V'yagita bo yamam v'layla. The Tzvah of learning Torah is both day and night. So that those few hours that a person sleeps should be nighttime hours, and the night should be spent both in sleeping and the study of Torah should be divided. The Gemara says that one of the rabbis claimed the reason my words of Torah are so sharp is because I spend my days on Torah. I spend my entire day on Torah. I don't waste a second of the day. Anything I must do, I do at night. Because the day is more fit for the study of Torah. But that's why one learns Torah by day. His Torah shines much clearer. The Gemara says that the daughters of Rav Chisda asked Rav Chisda one time, "Don't you want to sleep a little?" He was studying Torah for a prolonged period of time without a stop. But they said, "It's time to rest. Don't you want to sleep a little?" Rav Chisda answered, "Not necessary. If you're worried about my being short on sleep, there'll soon come a time where there'll be long days which will be very short, very small. Then we'll sleep a lot. We'll make up for all the sleep I miss now." Those days means after death. A person is placed in the grave. Those are long days, long to sleep in. Very small days as far as doing mitzvot, as far as studying Torah. So, if at that time I cannot study Torah, I'll have time to sleep, I may as well now, when I could study Torah, give up on my sleep, study Torah, then I'll make up for it later on. If I owe myself hours of sleep, I'll pay myself back in the grave and make up for all the hours of sleep that I missed out on. Rav Nachman ben Yitzchak said, we are daytime workers. We are the day shift. It's a day shift and a night shift. We work by day, which means our days should be spent working, studying Torah. At night, we rest. So that our work, our day shift work is a study of Torah. Day should be spent entirely on Torah. At nighttime, we rest, and of course, nighttime means when a person dies, too. We rest then. There's no more study after that. We get paid then for our daytime work. So let's put all our effort into this work. Then the Rabbi Avraham Bar Yaakov used to spend a certain period of time on Torah. That's called the Kvi'ut. He established a certain minimum period of time that he had to learn. Now, he knew that he could not spend less time than that. Once he determined, he made up his mind that this is a chiyuv, an obligation. He must learn this minimum number of hours. Now, if he found that during the day he had learned so many hours, but he was still missing the exact amount that he had himself had agreed upon, then he would pay this back, be considered a debt. And at night he would pay this back from the time off that he had. He would subtract this from his hours of sleep or from his hours of rest. He knew that this debt must be paid that night. He had an obligation by day to study a certain period of time. If he failed to fulfill that obligation, he would pay back that amount of time missing the very same night. This was how seriously rabbis, the Yemeni, taught us to take a study of Torah, how we should apportion our time properly, how we should learn Torah with hatmadah, a strong desire. You like something, if you appreciate its value, you go into it with enthusiasm. Go into the study of Torah because time is short. It is only now that we can study Torah. Later on is vacation time. The person gets to, oh, not bad, that's vacation time. You cannot make up for any time missing here. So prepare yourself for this long journey to come and come prepared with a treasure full for which there is so much reward there. Yehuda says, to go back to the topic of wine convention, Yehuda says that a person who drinks wine and drinks it with moderation, where it does not affect his mind, he does not drink it to excess, then that person possesses some of the wisdom of the 70 elders of the Sanhedrin. Why? Because wine is yayin. Yayin is begimetria 70. And the word sod, sod means secrets, also is begimetria 70. These two are alike, wine and secrets. If you pour wine into a person, what comes out? Secrets. Person who becomes drunk automatically gives out things which he should not. He divulges secrets which he would never say if he was sober. So therefore, a person who does not drink to excess is careful. He has the 70 that stops, that halts the flow of these secrets. The wisdom of the 70 elders. Person is drunk. There are secrets that come out. These secrets could be very harmful. For one thing, he come out with secrets about friends or neighbors that could be lashon hara. Second thing, it could be secrets of his own private life, which are embarrassing. Third, it could even be secrets of Torah, which too should not be revealed to every person. There are certain items in Torah which must be kept secret. That's what Torah is called sod. That we're not supposed to let these secrets flow forth to everyone. Well, there's a person who is an atheist, as we shall know, would mock words of Torah that are kept secret. If they are revealed to him, you give him ammunition. Chas v'shalom, you invite war mockery. These must be held back. Well, therefore, when a person drinks wine to excess, these secrets could come out. In all cases, they could be damaging. So a person who drinks wine in moderation, where it does not affect his state of mind, that person has the part of the wisdom of the 70 elders, because the sod remains within him instead of coming out. The Iliad says, though, that wine, in those days, of course, the usual beverage was wine. Today, we haven't got that as the regular household beverage. Then, when everyone drank wine, it was much more difficult to control the amount that was imbibed. But the Iliad says that since wine is an item of holiness, that is used for kiddush, things of kiddushah, then any house, any home where wine is spilled like water, that house will be given a flow of bracha, blessings from heaven. Any home where wine is not spilled like water will be deprived of bracha from heaven, blessing from heaven. What is meant spilled like water? This means a person is not miserly when it comes to pouring wine for guests. Wine and water are two separate items. Water is cheap. There is no price for it. Therefore, a person pours water with an open heart. When it comes to pouring wine, his hand becomes much more held back, tighter. So when a person is as free in pouring wine for others as water, then in turn he has this mazal o beracha. The Gemara says, in connection with this, that there are three items which we can recognize, detect the character of a person. Three items in Hebrew are bekoso, bekiso, bekaso. Koso means his cup of wine. Kiso means his pocket, his money. Kaso, his anger. Why these three? Actually, these three refer to the same item. As we said, spilling wine like water. The guest, out of the goodness of his heart. A person can be recognized with his cup of wine the way he pours that wine. If he pours it freely, that shows his character is one of goodness and kindness. If he is miserly with it, we know that his character is one of stinginess. Kiso is pocket. What's the reason why a person would withhold the flow of this wine? Because he is very tight in releasing some of this expensive item, money, to others. In other words, this refers to a person who is a sport or one who is tight. Third, kaso is anger. If wine is spilled freely, and sometimes it's spilled out, we say spilled, of course, it means that in pouring wine freely, you can overturn a glass or you can let the glass overflow. And this would mean that there is wine wasted. Now, a person would become angry at this. This shows that he is quick to anger. A person sees his wine flowing freely, and it does not bring up any anger at all within him. You know that this person's character is one of soft, subdued nature. The Eminence says that these are the three items that you recognize a person's character by, but the Yesh Omnim, there are some who say, Af B'Sachako. You also recognize a person by his laughter, smile, his laughter. Well, this means simply the same thing. A person who smiles at a calamity, bottle of wine dropped, broke, it was a loss, or it poured out, glass turned over, was overturned, and the wine was wasted. And he smiled at it. He didn't take this seriously. He didn't become angry. This shows a good-naturedness to the part of a person. This, too, would refer to the same as kaso, anger. Same time, it seems, it would seem, or nida, that we can add something here, derive something additionally. Of course, this is just a dush, say it, devar tzachut. Notice that the Gemara says, v'yesh omnim, some rabbis say, some say. It doesn't say who. Now, there is a story about two rabbis, Rabbi Meir, you wrote about it before, and Rabbi Natan, both of whom were appointed as second and third in command to Rebbe Gamliel, who was the Nasi, the chief rabbi. Even it says that these two, the man and the attendant, decided to rebel. Actually make a revolution to dethrone, depose the Nabian Leo, and to take over the leadership. The result was that this plot was found out in advance. And for this, they were expelled from the yeshiva. Expelled meaning that henceforth, whatever they said, they made statements in the Gemara, they would be quoted without names. Instead of the Gemara saying, Rabbi Meir says, this law, we find many times in the Gemara, Acherim. He was called Acherim. This rabbi says, this law and Acherim, Acherim means others. Others say this. We have Acherim, generally it means Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Natan was given a different term, Yesh Omanim. What did rabbi say? It's this way. Yesh Omanim, some say differently. This was the pseudonym for Rabbi Natan from that timeline, but to have his name mentioned. Yesh Omanim refers to Rabbi Natan. But of course, we always are mitaktik, particular by the name. Rabbi Natanzo is the one who drank most of the words that Rabbeinu saw. But above all else, for a person to be complete, to be pure, he must maintain himself in a status of simcha always. Rabbeinu said it is a very great mitzvah to always be besimcha. You can recognize a person's character, his goodness, his purity, both beruchniyut, religion, and the gashmiyut, person's traits of character itself, the dealings with others, by his degree of simcha. Person can gain gan'eda by simcha alone, by making others happy. So therefore it says, yesh omrim, others say, who are these others? Yesh omrim, Rabbi Natan, says, af pesachko. I add to these three that most important is the sachko, the smile, and the happiness, the laughter of a person. This is the main characteristic for a person in showing his character, because this is, above all, most important quality that a person should possess. The Gemara says, a man whose name was Bunyas, and it happened that his father's name was Bunyas too, once came to the yeshiva of Rebbe. Rebbe was Rabbeinu HaKadosh from Yudah Nasi. When he walked in, Rebbe said, make room, special room, for this person, kavod for him, special seat, because he has $10,000. It's a very important person. Later, another man walked in. Rabbeinu HaKadosh said, make a special seat of honor for the second person who has $20,000. Means even more kavod to him. He then says that Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi said to Rabbi, but you gave more kavod to the second one than to the first. The first one hasn't got $10,000. The first one has much more. His father owns 1,000 ships, vessels, on sea. And he has 1,000 villages which he owes real estate on land, which means that he's far wealthier than the second one that came in. Bnei Kadosh said to him, when you see his father, tell him that when he sends his son here, to have him dressed with more expensive clothes, have become dressed better, or receive more kavod. The event is received that the Rebbe gave great kavod to the wealthy, and the Akiva too, also his custom was to give very much kavod to those who were wealthy. There are two reasons for this. First, naturally, they did not give kavod to a person who had a lot of money. They gave kavod to a person who spent a lot of money in support of Torah, which means that these were given kavod for their money. They were not Talmidei Chachamim, they were not learned. But because they supported the study of Torah, they merited receiving kavod as much as a Talmid Chachem. That's one reason. Second reason is, The Iglesia says that a person should never allow himself to use Torah as a means of receiving wealth or receiving kavod. The Rebbe was the Nasi. The Beit HaKadosh was given extraordinary amount of kavod of all the Jews. Rebbe Akiva too had 40,000 students. And all the Jews at that time recognized him as the chief rabbi, the greatest rabbi. And he too received a lot of kavod, which he did not want. So these two were also, Rebbe was the wealthiest person alive. He was wealthier than the Roman king. Rebbe Akiva too, the Gemara says, started off as a pauper. Later on, he became so wealthy that he was far wealthier than any person in his time. So they wanted to show that kavod is given to a wealthy person. This would imply that they are receiving kavod also, not because of their Torah, because of the money they possessed. This way they could avoid accepting kavod because of Torah. They could attribute it to the fact that there is money involved. This would purify their Torah to not have any kavod attached to it. But the main point is that the ikar, main kavod given to a wealthy person, is not for the money he possesses. A person who has a lot of money and does not use it wisely, King Solomon says that this money is the person's undoing. It is the greatest evil against this person. A person who is wealthy but uses that wealth for the sake of supporting Torah, supporting tzaddikim, supporting the poor, that person should be accorded the greatest kavod possible because he receives credit for their study of Torah. He then says, too, that the wealthy people in Bavel will receive Gehinom. Why? Because the Gemara states a case of one wealthy person who was asked for, rich man was asked for a coin for charity, and he refused. They asked him, give us food. He refused too. The Gemara says about this man, he must be a descendant of the Erev Rav, not from the Jews who left Egypt, but the converts, the Egyptian converts who left Egypt, as they were hard-hearted, they were cruel. This man is a descendant of them. Because the Gemara says that one who has pity on living things, it is certain that he is a descendant of Abraham Avinu. One who does not have pity, it is certain that he is not a descendant of Avinu. He must be a descendant of the Erev Rav, those who were that cruel. And the Gemara says that a person who has pity on others, only on that person will heaven have pity too. So a person who is cruel, sadistic, has no pity on others, then in turn, heaven will have no pity upon him. Now notice it says upon living things, not just humans. This means even animals too. Anything. There must be a kindness, a pity. One who has a rachamim on others, kindness, yet we treat it with kindness from heaven. If not, he will not. Therefore, the term of the Gemara says he is a descendant of Abraham Avinu, not Yitzhak Yaakov, because Abraham Avinu was the one to whom Hashem said, your mazal is, you will not have a child. But for you, I'm changing mazal, you will have a child. This means that a person might have a mazal to be poor, chas v'shalom, but if he is kind, then heaven too will have kindness, pity upon him, and change his mazal, he will receive instead a mazal of wealth. He then says that a person who looks forward to be fed by his friend, he must eat at the table of his friend, he's obligated to his friend for food, then for that person, he lives a life of darkness, a life of uneasiness, unpleasantness. It's not considered living because he cannot really enjoy the food he eats. It's difficult for him to swallow. It's not his own food. He feels obligated for every bite that he takes. This, the Jimenez says, is not considered living. Then the Jimenez says, actually, there are three whose life is not considered life. They are considered really living. It's a life of bitterness and darkness for them. First is the one we mentioned, one who must resort to food or assistance from his friend. Second is a man whose wife rules over him. A man whose wife is the ruler of the home, he has no life. His is a dark and frustrated life. Third is a person who is racked for pain with the Yesurim, Chas v'Shalom. For him, too, his life is considered a life of darkness, and there's no light, there's no enjoyment in life itself. It's a life of bitterness. These three are not considered living. The cure for it, of course, is, in most cases, teshuvah, tefillah. Except in the case, the Yemenah says elsewhere, case where a man's wife rules over him, he cannot come and complain to court, heavenly court or earthly court. His case is tossed out of court. If you are that low, if you let your wife rule over you, you deserve your fate. But though the life is so bitter, he still allows himself to be downtrodden by his wife. He deserves it. The case of the other two, though, a person could be mitpalel, pray for assistance from heaven, to be saved from this poverty or from the Yisurim, Chas v'Shalom. Only then can he bring simcha, happiness, into his life. The Yemenah says that Michal, the daughter of Cushi, Cushi was actually Shaul HaMelech. Remember we said Cush means Negro. Many times we call the great Tzadikim Cushim. The Jews too are called Cushim, Negroes. The Yemenah says why? Not Chas v'Chalila to say that they are like them, Chas v'Shalom, but to show that they are so different from others, just as the Cushim skin is different from normal skin, those who are normal, so too is this person so different, so much greater at Tzaddik than the normal person. We find that the Jews are called Cushim because they are Tzaddikim. The worst of the Jews are Tzaddikim compared to the best of the Goyim. When it says that Moshe Rabbeinu married a Cushit, Tzipora, means that she was so great at tzaddikit against other women, so different just as the skin of a Cushi is compared to others. The Yemenah says, why was King Shaul called Cushi? Because he was so great at tzaddik that he was as pure in his old age as he was the day he was born. He too is so different from others who by the time they reach old age have a long record of sins, Chas v'Shalom. Therefore, she was called Michal, the daughter of Cushi, who was the wife of David HaMelech. David HaMelech was the son-in-law of King Shaul. The evidence was that she was very anxious to perform mitzvot. Therefore, she was jealous of men. Why should men have the tremendous privilege of putting on tefillin, and women should be deprived of this? This jealousy, she insisted that she is going to put on tefillin, and she challenges, she dares the Sanhedrin. All the rabbis try to stop her. This was one case. Elena says that on the three holidays of the year, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, it is a mitzvah to be Ole Regel. All Jews in Israel should walk to Yerushalayim to be seen there at the Beit HaMikdash. That's called Aliyah Regel. For this mitzvah, it says, Yera'eh Kol Zechurcha. All males should come to Yerushalayim. Women are exempt. The wife of the prophet Yonah 2. Insisted that she wanted to have a zechut of walking to Yerushalayim for the holidays. The Yemenis says in both cases, Michal, a daughter of King Shaul, the wife of King David, did wear tefillin. The wife of Yonah did go up to Yerushalayim for the holidays, and the rabbis did not protest their actions. What does this prove? That they were afraid of them? Of course, you have giants who are afraid of the scorn of a woman, but the rabbis are fearless. The rules, the laws of Chachamim says, Lo taguru b'nei ish. We cannot be on the Sanhedrin unless you fulfill the mitzvah of fearing no one, because of the fact that they must be fair as judges, and they must mete out proper justice even to the strongest of men. We should not fear anybody that comes before them in trial. They give out the proper law to each one. Of course, we could trace the Lord Taguru B'nai Ish. We should not fear any men. Women, of course, might be feared. In this case, of course, Ish means any person. So the fact that the rabbis did not protest the actions of these two women shows that there was not actually a sin involved. Well, what is the reason why women cannot put on tefillin? Because of the fact that any mitzvah which has a time element attached to it, women are exempt from. For example, eating in the sukkah. That is a positive mitzvah, not negative. The dotes, women are required to obey just as well as men. Do not violate the Shabbat, women are required to obey. But the mitzvah which is a positive mitzvah, do, and even mitzvah which has it, which is restricted by time, women are exempt. Eating in the sukkah, at a certain time only, that's a mitzvah, women must are free from obeying that mitzvah. Or the mitzvah wearing tzitzit, it's only by day, not at night. There's a time limit to which women are exempt. Now, tefillin, it would seem, would be a mitzvah, which is also limited by time. We do not put on tefillin at night. We don't put it on Shabbat, holidays. Yet here, the fact that the Chachamim were not opposed to her putting on tefillin and not opposed to the wife of Yonah going to the Beit HaMikdash on the holidays shows that this mitzvah is not actually governed by time. Though we do not put on tefillin on Shabbat, it is not considered restricted by time because a person may put tefillin on a Shabbat. According to this Gemara, of course, mentioned the law remains differently. But according to this Gemara, it seems, you're going to derive that these rabbis hold that tefillin is not governed by time, it's not restricted. We don't have to put on tefillin on Shabbat, but it's not a law against it. And the same thing with going to the Beit HaMikdash, you may go at any other time too. However, the final word of the Midrash is that the fact was the Chachamim did protest and did stop this act of these two women. Because though, for example, Sukkah, she's exempt and she still may sit in the Sukkah, tefillin is different because the law says you must have a pure body and pure mind. Women are not that clear and therefore they are exempt and forbidden to put on tefillin.